The veil between the living and the supernatural world, it continues to thin. You are now listening to one of the fastest growing parapolitical podcasts out there in podcast land. Yes, you are now listening to the Paranormal Patriot. Thank you for joining me. As always, I am your host. My name is Tom Velasquez. As I said, the veil, as we move on in October, it continues to thin. It continues to lift. And that is because we are getting closer and closer to All Hallows Eve, the day when the living and the dead meet on a single plane. You may be experiencing things you have never experienced before. You may be seeing things that you just cannot understand. That is part of the fun that is October. The fun of October is the paranormal is now in the mainstream. People who are on the fence, who ridiculed the paranormal before, now they want to go on those ghost hunts. They want to go through those haunted houses. They want to go on those tours. They want to watch all the horror movies. For those of us who listen to this show that are into the paranormal, that is a daily routine for us. We go on those ghost hunts. We go in those haunted houses. We watch those horror movies. We see things. We hear things. We experience things that normal people, quote-unquote normal people, just will never understand. Because we are able to tap into that supernatural world, even though the veil is not as thin as it is right now. We've been called psychics. We've been called mediums. We've been called crazy for what we are able to experience. Because some people cannot experience this. Therefore, they don't believe it's even possible. Well, let me tell you, I, for one, am here to tell you, the skeptics out there, that the spirit realm is 150% real. I have seen things you would not believe. I have experienced things that you would never even begin to comprehend if you have not witnessed it before. Doing this show as a strictly paranormal show as I've done lately, it has brought me so much joy. It has been so much fun to do because I have grown an abundance of what I call friends, and these are like-minded individuals that email me, that message me, that tell me, Tom, I agree with you. I've seen things like that. The beauty of it, and we could learn a lot of this when we talk about politics, is I have paranormal investigators contact me all the time because everybody knows my theory on orbs. I do not believe orbs are ghosts. I believe orbs are dust, bugs, or some type of moisture in the air. But there are investigators out there that believe that orbs are ghosts. But instead of me hating them and them hating me because we have differing views, we talk about it. We have constructive conversations. We debate each other. I tell them why I think that orbs are not ghosts, and they tell me why they think orbs are ghosts. And the beauty of it all is both parties walk away more educated, because we are willing to listen to the other side. There's no hatred. The paranormal community, honestly, is very, very close-knit. I have not met, well, I won't say not, but there are very, very few people that I have met that I would say, I don't really want to talk to them again. Being an empath as I am, and for those of you who don't know, an empath is someone that can sense who you are, essentially, before you even say a word. I can feel your emotions, your energy. I am one that I cannot see your aura. I don't know what your aura looks like, but I feel it. I know the minute a negative person walks up to me, I can feel it. It drains me. It just sucks my soul. That's why I felt so horrible at my last job, because it was filled with so many negative people. And that's why I'm so uplifted at this new job I have, because everybody's just laid back and everybody's just a good person. I can feel that. So there's not many people that I have talked to that I have said, I don't want to talk to them again. And when I do, before I even talk to them, I know that this person does not have good intentions, does not have good energy. Some people, for my empaths that are listening to this show, you know, being an empath is a blessing and a curse, because you are drawing in the energy from everyone around you, be it good and bad. And you go into a room full of people, it can be overwhelming. But again, the joy of doing this paranormal part of the show is all of the good people I've come in contact with. Now, a lot of people contact me and say, Tom, I love the paranormal, but I don't know if I believe in it because I've never seen a ghost. I've never seen anything I would consider supernatural. So the question begs to be asked, why do some people see spirits while others do not? Why are some people so close-minded to it? And my theory on this is simply, it is what we are conditioned to believe, with an exception. Now, the human mind, you have to look at the human mind and the human spirit, because they really, they're truly amazing. We haven't even begun to tap into what our mind and our spirit can do. Now, when we were young, we were taught, essentially, and when I say this, I'm really talking about the Western civilization, I guess, Western society or Western culture. We're taught, essentially, and look at your past. Look at when you were young, when your parents were teaching you things, and in school, you were taught, if you can't see it, if you can't touch it, if you can't feel it, if you can't smell it, it's not real. So we were brought up that way. And we were conditioned to believe, if I can't see it, if I can't touch it, if I can't smell it or feel it, then it doesn't exist. Let's take that another step. Let's go to religion. Ask yourself this. Why do Christians have visions of Jesus? But why do Muslims have visions of Muhammad? Why do Buddhists have visions of Buddha? It's because of what we are conditioned, what we were raised to believe. Our mind is a sponge, and our mind takes in that. And that is not to dissuade any specific religion. That's just saying that's what we were brought up to believe. I, growing up, was brought up a Christian. But at an early, early age, I don't know why. I don't know what it was. My youngest son is the same way. He questions everything. When I tell him to do something, and it infuriates me. Mom and Dad, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I was like that, because my youngest is exactly like I was. I questioned everything. I remember asking my third grade teacher when she was telling us about evolution, Mrs. McGovern, if we evolved from apes, why are there still apes? That is how my third grade mind functioned. It always questioned everything. My youngest always questions everything. Zachary, I need you to clean up your room. Why? Why would you need me to clean up my room? Because Dad told you to. That is how his 10-year-old mind thinks. And is it any coincidence that this is the child out of all my children that just is involved in the paranormal with me? He loves the paranormal. My daughter, who is, I don't know if she's skeptical anymore. I remember we went into, in Corunna here in Michigan where I live, we have a historical village. And one of the in the historical village, one of the houses that you can go through every now and then, we went through there at Christmas time. They open up the village. It's really beautiful. They have it lit up. They have carols. They have horse-drawn carriages through the village. It's really great. But one of the houses was open, and it was a house built in the late, I'd say, we'll go mid to late 1800s. It was built on site and then eventually converted into a funeral parlor. Well, we were walking upstairs, and she was ahead of me, and we were going into one of the bedrooms, and she just turned into the bedroom and came out white as a ghost as I was going in. I'm like, what's going on? She was literally running, and I took everything I had to stop her. She said, I just saw something. It looked like a ghost. It was there, and then it wasn't. And I went in there, and I didn't see anything. I'm like, hold on. What did you see? She said, I turned in, and there was a lady, and she had dresses on like the people were the mannequins, essentially, downstairs had. And I was staring at her, and she just went away. And she was terrified. She was a younger child at that point. She had an open mind. Children can see things that we don't, because there is a spiritual door that we all have. And it is formed at a young age by our conditioning and upbringing. That spiritual door may be Jesus, it may be Buddha, it may be Allah, it may be everybody or anybody. Whatever we are conditioned to believe as a young child is essentially our upbringing. But there are some, like me, that break through that. And I call that the occult. And I know a lot of you listening right now said, oh, he used the word occult, demon. No, occult is not Satan. It's not demonic. We're going to go over that next week. But I, at a young age, and you can call me a rebel, and a lot of people who believe in the paranormal and have seen paranormal, if you look at their upbringing, they were rebels. They rebelled against their upbringing, and I did too. That's why I believe I can see things that people don't normally see, because my mind is open to that world. It's not open to the world that I was brought up to believe in. I was able to break through the door of Christianity and open the door of the occult. And when I opened the door of the occult, it didn't make me a demon. It didn't make me Satan. It made me more open to what is around me. It expanded my mind. And I'm not saying that those of you who are Christians, who are Muslims, who are Buddhists, have a closed mind. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is there's another world out there that most people don't realize exists. And this show is going to expose that world. I'm going to try and break through that door so that you can experience that world. That world, at first, may be terrifying. I remember the first time I saw a ghost, I was terrified. I actually think I might have peed my pants a little. I think I was like 7 years old, so I may have peed my pants because I was 7 years old, but I don't know. But it was terrifying to me. But then I came to realize that over the years that this is a gift. There is not many people that see this realm. I'm one of them. And that is a gift that I am thankful for every day. When I first realized I had this gift, I wasn't thankful. I was mad. Why did I have this? Why do I see these things? Why do I feel these things? Why am I always feeling other people's emotions? When you come to realize that that is a gift and you realize how to use that gift, then it is truly a gift. Let me hear from my paranormal investigators, my people who are in tune to the paranormal, and my empaths out there. Let me know who you are. Tell me stories. How did you know that you had a gift? We're going to come right back. And I know we're in paranormal month, but this particular week, I had numerous emails from California listeners that said, Tom, please, for the love of God, talk about this blackout. in California. Tell people what is going on, because what you're being told is not the truth. I don't know exactly what's going on. I'm not a resident of California, thank God. But I'm going to appease my listeners in California who are abundant. And I'm going to talk briefly, and I mean briefly because this is Paranormal Month, but I'm going to talk briefly about the power outage in California and why it's there and how it's affecting people. So sit back, relax, open that mind. We're going to talk a little conspiracy, and then we're going right back into Halloween, and we're going to talk Halloween memories, the memories some of my listeners had as children and what it was like in years past going out trick-or-treating. For those of you who are younger, you need to listen to this because this is how it really was and how it should be today. And for those of my older listeners, let's take a trip down memory lane. You are listening to the Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I will be right back. From the days of French settlers and the ghouls who tormented them, to the grim realities of early factories and their gruesome death tolls, Detroit is a town with a devilishly scary past. Its citizens have long straddled the line between good and evil, and more than a few rules have been broken over the years. As Halloween approaches, we can all spare a nervous glance towards Detroit's darker side. It's never wise to travel alone through these storied corridors of history, so there are some that are willing to offer themselves as your guides on a macabre journey through the Motor City's darkest historical moments. The ghosts, the cemeteries, the murders, the history of Devil's Night in Detroit, the hauntings, the unexplained disappearances, the tricks and the treats, all await you on the all-new Haunted Detroit, the Dark Side of History Tour. Join me Saturday, October 19th, 2019, from 12 to 5, as we meet up from the Coolidge Inn Bar, 1267 Coolidge Highway in River Rouge, Michigan, for a tour of one of the greatest cities the world has ever known. A city with a dark past, a city on the rebound, a city with history that goes back hundreds of years, and in that history is the paranormal. Join me Saturday, October 19th from 12 to 5 for Haunted Detroit, the Dark Side of History Tour. And when you get there, tell them the Paranormal Patriot sent you. Hey everybody, it's Tom Velasquez, host of the Paranormal Patriot. It is Paranormal Month here on the Paranormal Patriot, so send in those paranormal stories, those paranormal encounters. Send it in to me so I can give our listeners an account of what you experienced. Send it to me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Again, ghostseeker4@charter.net. If you've had a paranormal, supernatural, unexplained encounter, you have to get a hold of me. Contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Don't let the Paranormal Month here on the Paranormal Patriot go by without giving your paranormal encounter to every one of our listeners. Our listeners love to hear of other listeners' paranormal accounts. They love hearing about it. They want to know they're not alone. Give me and give our listeners your paranormal, your unexplained accounts, your experiences. Do it. ghostseeker4@charter.net.
She moves in silence and you can't comprehend.
All right, I know it's Paranormal Month here on the Paranormal Patriot, but there is a call to action. I received so many emails from my California listeners this week that wanted me to talk about this, that I had to do it. I couldn't let it go. Because, and I'm sure most of you have heard about this, but I have my thoughts on this. And it might not be as controversial and as conspiratorial as a lot of you are expecting, but I have my thoughts. For those of you who don't know, there are 800,000 Californians that are going to lose power. It's actually already happened, and apparently a lot of them are listeners of the Paranormal Patriot. PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, began cutting power, and I mean just shutting it off, so there is no power going to these people's houses, to these people's businesses, because of the fear of wildfires. The fear is there are high winds coming to California, and the high-tension power lines are old and decrepit and hazardous, so they want to cut power to avoid them sparking a wildfire like it did last year. Okay, my first question is, why were those lines not fixed? PG&E is going bankrupt, if they aren't already bankrupt. Is this a ploy to try and save money? I want you to hear from people that are affected by this. Some of them think it's okay. Some of them, understandably, are pissed.
You're the second person to tell me this, what do I think about it? It sucks, you know, for our business.
You know, I don't know a lot about it. I just heard about it this morning.
I really feel like the electric companies are punishing us because so many people were upset over the fires.
We're going to have to relocate until this power outage is done.
Conditions being forecast historically have led to catastrophic wildfires, and PG&E Meteorology is actively monitoring the weather for this situation around the clock.
I don't see the purpose of it. I really don't.
I don't want to sit in 5 days in a house trying to figure things to do in the dark.
But it's not fun. Yeah. Power's been off since 12:30 last night. We've got 60 pounds of ice.
They created these conditions. It was unnecessary. Now it's time for them to do the right thing.
So the question I have is, how does anybody live in California? Your taxes are sky high. Your gas, to buy a gallon of gas, is astronomical. And on top of that, they're cutting the power. Why are they cutting the power? Because they say high winds may cause high tension lines to produce wildfires. Now, the governor of California went on record as saying, because the dead and dying trees and bushes and foliage is a tinderbox. It is kindling for these situations to arise. Now, my issue with that is, when Donald Trump last year threatened to cut federal funding by saying that exact thing, that they have not taken care of the dead and dying foliage that is causing these wildfires. He was chastised. He was lambasted in the media. But the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, says it, and it's okay. And this is the double standard that I have an issue with, that the media doesn't report the news, they report their opinions. Listen, I have a lot of listeners in California that are really, really upset. They are sitting in the dark right now because PG&E is bankrupt and they have no ability to fix the damage, the antiquated lines that are causing this issue. But the state of California puts aside $75 million for just this situation. Well, no wonder why your taxes are so high. Rather than having PG&E fix the issue, fix those lines that are antiquated and possibly causing wildfires, we're just going to cut the power of 750,000 people. That's ridiculous. God forbid you have a machine that is keeping you alive and your power's cut? What happens then? You know, PG&E at this point is worried because they were blamed for last year's horrific wildfires in California. So they're worried. We're going to cut off the power to just eliminate that possibility. What happens if you cut off the power of somebody that's on a ventilator? Somebody that needs a machine to stay alive and they die. What happens then? Is it okay then just to let somebody die as opposed to letting a couple houses go up in flames? Ladies and gentlemen of California, I feel for you. I really do. Jay Miles from Vanishing Gates actually emailed me and said, hey, you want to talk about a subject? Let's talk about the California power outage. Boo Rhodes, who has a podcast, Spooky Boo's Scary Storytime. It's horror-related stories that she writes. You should check it out. She is dealing with a power outage. Among over 50 other people that I received emails from that said, Tom, this is ridiculous. Why are we dealing with power outages in California? Well, A, PG&E is bankrupt. And B, they don't want the liability of being blamed for another wildfire. And C, California's broke. How can California be broke? Because they tax the living daylights out of each other. This is not a conspiracy. Trust me, everybody. This is a business move by PG&E to try and save face. But really, what choice do these people have? There is no other power company out there that they can use. They are stuck with having their power shut off, like a third world country. The people of California, I don't know what to say to you, other than, it's lovely here in Michigan. Come on over here. Just keep your Democratic views in California. Come over here and bring your Republican views, because the Democratic views, the socialist views that Governor Brown and Gavin Newsom, that's what brought us to this situation. So, California, I don't know, man. Godspeed. I hope you get through it. That's all I want to talk about this. I don't want to talk anymore. I want to get into the paranormal. I want to get into the Halloween memories. So sit back, relax. Bring on the nostalgia. Let's go into Halloween memories and how Halloween was when I was younger and even before that. Sit back, relax. Open that mind to when you were a child. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. I'll be right back.
You're too young to be on that bridge. You're too young to be standing on the edge. Too young to be alone with the rain. You're too young. You just want to be.
Hey, everybody. This is Tom Velasquez, the host of The Paranormal Patriot, which can be heard every Wednesday from 3:30 to 4:30 on Coming Right Up. Are you intrigued by the paranormal? Do conspiracies excite you? Do you like to talk about ghosts, UFOs, or cryptids, or just politics in general? If so, my show, The Paranormal Patriot, is for you. Tune in every Wednesday from 3:30 to 4:30 on Coming Right Up.
But you already know what it is. Why you tripping, flipping out like I'm a chauvinist pig? Hoping that this could turn to what was never meant to be. I've been honest from the jump. You were chasing misery, living a lie. Should've picked a different guy. Heart emojis turned to tears in a blink of an eye. Said it was cool, we only in it for the fun of it. Rough sex, cuddling, nothing in public. Must've been extra rounds, make you want to set a...
Alrighty, this is going to be my favorite part of the month because I am a huge history fan. I love the 50s. 60s are okay. 70s. The 70s remind me of dirt. Everybody in my mind was dirty in the 70s. The 80s were awesome. I hated them when I was growing up, but looking back, they were absolutely awesome. I got a lot of emails from my listeners stating what they remember from Halloween. I received numerous memories. And I got one from a gentleman by the name of Patrick Keller. And he said, Tom,
I'm not going to rewrite my whole memory because I put it on a blog. So I will give you the link to my blog, and I want you to share this with your listeners. And the title of the blog is Halloween Memories and Nostalgia from this Generation X-er. So without further ado, let's begin some of our listeners' memories of Halloween, starting with Patrick Keller. He says, from the moment there was a hint of fall in the air, I have been reminiscing and thinking about Halloween's growing up. Today, I decided to type aloud just some of the memories and thoughts that came to mind. I bet those of you who grew up in the 70s and 80s have similar memories. Go ahead, climb on into the DeLorean, and let's travel back. Back into time. To a time where Halloween meant witches with brooms, black cats, skeletons, and jack-o'-lanterns with basic triangle eyes and jagged teeth. There was nothing more exciting than seeing your classroom teacher get out a big stash of black and white and orange construction paper for craft time. Remember scarecrows? You don't see those guys much anymore. Maybe it was just a country thing. They were fun to make, but it was a lot of itchy and scratchy work. I remember making a few with my parents and raiding my dad's closet and drawers just for the right look. I remember getting so excited to go down the basement for the box of decorations. Some 1970s cardboard cutouts for the windows were all it took. My favorite was the witch. She was so creepy. I also very much remember the honeycomb scarecrow centerpiece that we'd keep in the middle of the dinner table. I'm surprised it lasted as long as it did. Then there was the giant skeleton with movable parts. My sister remembers the black cat that had similar movable appendages. Lately, I've made several Google searches for vintage Halloween nostalgia, and when you search for decorations, I recognize almost every generation of the more popular cutouts and can tell you where I remember them from. Some of them hung in teachers' classrooms. When I see a lot of popular Halloween decorations now, like the orange and purple strings of lights that just scream Christmas to me, and the noisy, obnoxious blow-up contraptions, I just don't understand them. But this is probably just another one of those signs of getting older and less hip. I wish that I could reproduce some of the more classic decorations like they used to. Many of the popular cutouts from the 1980s were apparently cutouts from the 1960s. I will say that there is one trend in the last few years that I have been seeing in the stores that I definitely like. Everything is glittery and sparkly now. Yes, please. I would have loved a glittery orange pumpkin as a kid. Oh my gosh. Memories of Elmer's glue and glitter. Don't get me started. Did you have classroom parties thrown by the room mothers? There was always punch, games, including the one where you have to sit on the balloon to pop it. I hated that one. And treats tied up in those paper treat bags. By the time my younger sister went through school, they were afraid to call them Halloween parties. And for a time, they referred to them as pumpkin parties. Silly. I can also remember the Christian versions of those treat bags that they were given at church. I'm not sure what Bible verse would be appropriate, but we always had one. People were encouraged to use those on Halloween, just in case anyone thought you were a devil worshiper because you were celebrating such a fun holiday. Even as a child and as a good boy, I can remember thinking, yeah, right, and passing up the opportunity to take the Bible thumper bags. Of course, the Christian treat bags weren't a big deal considering a grandmother of mine, who was a strict Jehovah's Witness, lived a few houses down. She would preach about how horrible Halloween was, or for most holidays, and I remember feeling pressured by her not to celebrate it. I loved her, but Halloween was one of those awkward times for that part of the family. Speaking of treats, I can almost guarantee that at some point in time, all of us were given a Tootsie Roll Pop with a white tissue wrapped over the top and tied with a yarn. Am I right? Candy corn. When you went trick-or-treating, did you love or hate the popcorn ball? I didn't get too excited about anything that was homemade, and sweet tarts or anything with marshmallows were always what I had left from my loot in February or March before I would decide to throw the rest of it out. Actually, trick-or-treating wasn't something that I took part in for very long, and actually, my sister hated it. For a few years, my parents would take me and my little sister, once she was in the picture, to the homes of family members and close friends. We'd show off our costumes, hop back in the car, and head off to the next destination before going back home to catch remaining trick-or-treaters at our own house. And actually, handing out the treats to the few visitors we did have was way more fun, in my opinion. When I was 6, I moved away from town and out into the country. So for me, the traditional neighborhood trick-or-treating wasn't a big thing. I do remember always hearing my friends at school talk about it, though. And we'd see ghosts and goblins lurking all over town when we were in the car driving from one place to the next. I'm not sure I would have ever walked up to a stranger's house for candy. I'm sure this is due in part to the warnings of things like razors and apples and poisons and candy. Those things never happened, of course, but I remember the warnings that were popular in those days. In costumes, they were different in those days. Another grandmother of mine owned a fabric shop when I was young, and I would, quote-unquote, help her clean and organize. I loved it. I remember being very interested in McCall's costume patterns. Do you remember how cool it was to pick out a makeup kit with just 3 basic colors, just some plastic vampire teeth in your mouth, and it will make up for how cheap the makeup looked? No vampire teeth? That's okay. Just stick some black wax on a few of your teeth and go as a hobo. Remember when dressing up as a hobo for Halloween was popular? Why did we do that? Weird. Speaking of weird, there are certain smells, like duct tape, for example, that instantly transport me back to the smell of a Halloween mask. I've heard others agree with me on this one, so I guess it can't be that weird. I'm not sure when it started or even if it was meant to be a tradition, but we usually had either chili or potato soup for dinner on Halloween. There was a year when my father somehow ended up with orange potato soup because of something weird that happened with the carrots that he added to the mix. I remember convincing my parents to let me add food coloring to the soup years later to truly make it orange. We listened to Monster Mash or even my favorite spooky sound effects tape, I still have it, while setting the table for dinner. Now as an adult, I usually try to carry out the Halloween tradition. Now we live in a large suburban neighborhood and I can't even get home from work because they're knocking on the door in the daylight, so I make my chili the night before. We sit out on the porch with a few decorations, candles, tiki torches, and a big bowl of treats, and plenty of hot cider for anyone who wants it. And those are the Halloween memories of Patrick Keller. Now, we're going to go into other Halloween memories. CJ says, my sister and I started out with the little box store-bought costumes. Cinderella for me and Casper the Ghost for her. I can still feel that icky mask slipping down and the eye holes getting off kilter. Also, the slobber on the inside, getting on my chin as I'd shout, trick or treat, with excitement at each new door. We were probably 13 when we decided, or Mom and Dad did, that we were too old to go anymore. The haunted houses were pretty spooky too back then. Today, people go all out creating these haunted houses. There is no way I'd be caught dead in one. Way too scary. Patrick says, for a few years, there was a haunted house operated in my small historic town growing up. It was the first one for me to go through, and it was super scary, but I remember I loved it. It was supposedly pretty good in comparison to the haunted houses in Kansas City at the time. I'm not sure if that's true or not. My neighbors ran it, and I was so jealous. I used to make little haunted houses in my basement growing up and spent lots of money for like 3 people to go in and then tear them down. Frugal Delight said, we didn't need $40 costumes and fancy treat bags. We used pillowcases and made makeup out of poster paint and cold cream. We did have our scare talk from parents that told us we couldn't eat anything until we brought it home to be checked. That was for razor blades and poison. She said those were the days when we had parties at school and our moms would make treats, not store-bought, without any ill effects. I'm pretty nostalgic myself, and I still have those cardboard moving characters from the 70s and Halloween blow molds from even earlier. I do have to mention, the party game I liked the least was Bobbing for Apples. All those saliva germs got to me. Thanks for asking and reminiscing about Halloween. It brings back great memories. And then there's Heather, who said, "Oh my gosh, what great memories. I was at Red Crayon one year with my siblings. I think my mom made it from a pattern in a magazine. We were also M&M's one year." She said, "I remember exactly those plastic masks you were talking about. I had a Casper mask, and I know it well. And I remember how hard it was to breathe through that little slit in the mouth. I missed the days of homemade costumes and Halloween parties. The days when you could actually wear your costumes to school and have a caramel apple and candy in classroom parties. They're not allowed anymore, and that makes me so sad." She said, "Tom, I trick-or-treated all through high school, and my friends every year in high school would go as babies, and we would don bottles in footed sleeper PJs. Oh, I miss those days." She ended the letter with, "Tom, I honestly don't think the kids of today know what they're missing. We had such a phenomenal time, a fun time on Halloween, and the kids today just don't appreciate it." And lastly, a lady by the name of Aunt Sarah says, "Tom, being a lot older and living in the country, we only had maybe 7, at the most 8 houses we could walk to. And those were all farms spread apart by miles. While we didn't get much Halloween candy, we spent a lot of time walking in the dark, golf courses, fields, and always then by the graveyard. It seemed particularly spooky to us because the families left strange things on the headstones back then. Never forget when Mr. Simonette hid under the black tarp in the ditch right where we had to walk and rose up, scaring the bejesus out of us. There was always about 6 or 7 of us. The Simonette boys, Lonnie, Scott, Jenny, Carol Ann, Leslie, Christian, and Patty. Times were different back then. We didn't have a lot of houses to go to, so we'd have houses rotate every year to have a Halloween party, and those parties were such a good time. What we didn't get trick-or-treating, we made up for fun hanging out with our friends. I really, truly wish the children of today would learn how to associate with their neighbors and have those parties and have the friends that we used to have in the 50s, because we don't have those anymore. Kids today are too involved in their gadgets. Things need to go simple again. Thanks for reminiscing, Tom. It brought back great memories." And that are just some of the few. I literally randomly took them out because they had so many. I want to tell you what I remember from Halloween. Now, keep in mind, when I think of Halloween, I have a birthday the next day. So Halloween was even more exciting for me. But in the 80s growing up, it was amazing. We didn't just go to our friends' and family's houses like they do today. We didn't have the Halloween parties at the houses, unfortunately. That's why I'm bringing to my kids, have Halloween parties. Bring all your family and your friends over and just enjoy yourself before Halloween, and then the day of Halloween, go and get your candy. That's what I'm trying to teach them. Every year we have a Halloween party, and every year it's getting bigger and bigger. We're expecting over 150 people in our house this year. That can't fit 150 people. But you know what? They're going to be going outside. There'll be people outside, hanging outside, and everybody's going to have a great time. And our kids, these are the memories they're going to have. So when my daughter and when my sons have Halloween parties, they're going to remember how mom and dad's parties were? They were amazing. We had so many people there. We had so many friends. And more importantly, everybody was loving one another. Everybody was having such a good time. And we need to bring that back. My memories of Halloween, and I grew up in the 80s, in the 70s. I was born in 71. Honestly, either I blacked it out or I don't remember much about the 70s. But I remember the 80s. And as I grew up in the 80s, I was 10 years old in 81, late 81 actually, November 1st of 1981, I was 10 years old. So I remember growing up in Halloween in the 80s was amazing. I would get ready. In those days, in schools, you had about 3 hours of school that day, and then the rest of the day on Halloween was a Halloween party. They actually called it a Halloween party. You could wear your costume. And when I say costume, it was a plastic sheet or plastic formed form over you. Like one year I was Darth Vader, and I had the plastic non-forgiving. I mean, this thing was so uncomfortable, and it had a cape that really didn't move much. And you put the plastic mask with the rubber band over your head, and back then I had hair, and it literally it tore the hair out of your head, but you didn't care. And you couldn't see because there were only two slits out for the eyes and two little itty-bitty holes for you to breathe out of and a little slit for the mouth. In the listener that said we were drooling saying trick-or-treat was right because it was so exciting. We'd walk and literally in my school every year for Halloween, we would walk the halls in our costumes. And then we'd walk in the gym, and all the teachers would give us Halloween candy. We'd trick-or-treat at high school. You can't do that now. People are offended by that. You can't do that now. To avoid that, my kids in their school in Corona District, in the Corona School District, they just disregard Halloween and say, we're not dealing with it. Here's a half day. My kids have a half day on Halloween. The kids love it. Kids today do not have the reverence of Halloween that we did. Now, when they see 80s movies, because I love 80s movies. I grew up watching them, like E.T. and Monster Squad and who knows what else that goes with Halloween. They love how Halloween used to be, but they don't want to participate in Halloween. They love the Halloween party that we throw every year. This is how my kids celebrate Halloween. We live in a neighborhood. It's kind of like there's maybe 100, 150 houses. Nowadays, they bus kids in. I live in, it's between Owosso and Corona. It's called Caledonia Township. And they will literally bus kids in church vans. There's every year, three church vans full of kids. So you figure 30, 40 kids get out of these church vans from Flint and start trick-or-treating through our neighborhood. And then they go to the next neighborhood. And it's a continuous loop, which is fine. I don't mind. We don't hand out candy because we have kids of our own. Once the kids get old enough that they don't trick-or-treat anymore, we're going to hand out candy because that's fun to me. That is a blast to me. I would rather hand out candy. What we do is nowadays, here in Michigan, the last couple years, it's been really cold and it's been pouring the last couple years on Halloween. So we drive the kids around in our vehicle and boom, go to that house. I'll pick you up at that house. Boom, they go in. We move up a little bit and it's an arduous process. Last year wasn't bad. We actually got to walk, and it was fun because I actually got to meet my neighbors. I'm not a very social guy. I'm kind of withdrawn a little bit. Unless you talk to me, I'm not going to talk to you. I'm sorry. Unless you friend request me on Facebook, I'm not going to friend request you. It's just that's the way I am. So I got to meet a lot of my neighbors, and they're great people. And apparently, unbeknownst to me, this is turning into an adult holiday where you walk around with your kids and let them go trick-or-treating. And while they're trick-or-treating, you just walk behind them and have a couple of brewskis or have a couple of drinks, an adult beverage. I didn't know that, but that's apparently what it's turned into. But when I was younger, we would get home from school. I'd get home about 3, 3:30. And right from there, we were ready to go. We would get our costumes on. Now, theoretically, trick-or-treating didn't start till 6 o'clock, but that didn't mean anything. We were on the road ready to go. And that was by 5 o'clock. And we, at school, had coordinated. I'm trick-or-treating with this guy, this guy, this guy, this girl, this girl, this guy, this guy, this girl, this girl. We had a group of people that we already coordinated where we're meeting, when we're meeting, and what we're, where we're going to go. We would start at 5 o'clock, and people didn't care back then. If you showed up at 5 o'clock, they were ready for you. Bam! Trick-or-treaters are here. Let's get going. Nowadays, 5 o'clock, they're not answering. Trick-or-treating doesn't start till 6 and it ends at 8. Don't come here till 6. There's no joy in it anymore. But back then, in the 80s, we would start in my neighborhood. Everybody would, for some reason, meet at my house. And we would go up one side. And literally, if we didn't walk 3 to 4 miles, we would usually run those 3 to 4 miles. We did something wrong. We would carry pillowcases. And halfway through, I would have my mom and dad pick me up. Well, not really pick me up, but meet me. Pick up my pillowcase that's already full and give me a new one. I made out like a banshee. We would go, it didn't matter if it was our neighborhood or not. We had, if you look at a map, there's an area that's cordoned off by busy main roads. And we would just say, that's our area. And that was like a 3-4 mile area. And we went to neighbors we didn't even know, neighborhoods we had no idea. We'd be out till 9, 10 o'clock without a care in the world. And our parents didn't worry. Our parents wouldn't go with us. We'd go with our friends and bam, we're gone. And we'd come home 10:30, 9:30, 10:30. And we would just have a stash of candy. But our parents did go through every piece. And I still go through all my kids' pieces of candy. Every single piece I go through and say, this is good, this is good. Oh, that one looks like mine. I'm going to have that. I'm going to have that. I'm going to have that. You can have that bit of honey because that thing sucks. But we always had our parents go through our candy. And we had 2 pillowcases full. We had candy coming out our behinds. So much candy that we couldn't eat it all. It literally was hard and old by the time we got to it. We would throw away half of a pillowcase of candy. Nowadays, you can't get these kids to go more than just around their block. It's scary. It's sad, actually, because I want to bring the joy of Halloween. Halloween is not an evil. Halloween is fun. That's what it is, and it needs to be brought back to fun. Everybody's so, you know, they're so stick up the butt that, oh, well, Halloween is a very demonic holiday, and you're begging for food. You know what? Oh, well. You know, the one lady that sent me a letter, and I appreciate you sending it to me, but you know what? I don't mind. I had a lady that said, you know, I love Halloween, but I hate these kids coming in here that tower over me, and they're almost adults, and they're asking for candy. Listen, if you're taking the time to make a costume, I don't know your financial situation. There are some kids and some young adults out there that this is a time to get a little more. They may be struggling. I don't care. If you are taking the time to put a costume on and come to my house, I'm going to give you candy. I don't mind. You know, this is a time for me where it's fun. Everybody, young and old, has fun. I can't tell you, in my neighborhood, walking around with my kids and we're walking with neighbors, and I can't tell you how many times I see adults dressing up just to walk around. They're not even trick-or-treating. They're just walking around with their kids. It's so good to see. Halloween is not the evil holiday that a lot of people pretend it is and say it is. It's fun. It's a time for kids and young adults and even adults to just be a kid. Let it go. It's not satanic. It's not horrific. It's a time to be fun. We need to bring neighborhoods together again. Bring these neighborhood Halloween parties back. Let's get community back into the picture. You know, the 50s, everybody, there was, you'd go to the community center, you'd go to one place, a central place, and you'd have a huge Halloween party and then go trick-or-treating. We need that. We need to bring communities get together again, because nowadays communities are kind of separate. I mean, honestly, ask yourself, do you know your neighbors? I think I know, well, the neighbors right to the left of me, I know pretty well. Other than that, no. And it's scary. It's sad. When I was growing up, my parents, I knew every neighbor up and down my street because my parents knew every neighbor up and down my street. We're too busy nowadays. We need to slow down. We need to just interact with each other. And what a better way than to have a Halloween neighborhood party. It doesn't have to be extravagant. Just invite everybody over. Bob for apples. It doesn't matter if the germs are there. Somehow those people years ago survived bobbing for apples. Let's do it again. Let's have a Halloween party. Let's have a bobbing for apples, a pumpkin carving thing, where all the kids, we buy pumpkins for all the kids and they carve pumpkins all at one time. I mean, just something like that. Let's bring it back. You know, I have a huge Halloween party every year, and it's for family and friends, but I tell everybody, hey, if you want to come, just come. Anybody that's in my neighborhood, just come. I don't care. I just want to have a good time. I want to teach my children. This is what you do. You interact socially with other people. You don't stare at your phone. You don't stare at your tablet. You don't stare at your laptop. You don't stare at the TV. It doesn't respond. Your neighbors, your friends, they respond. And I hope everybody hears this message. I hope everybody, you know, regardless of how this show turns out, this has been one of my favorite shows because I love hearing how Halloween was in the past. I remember the plastic masks. I remember the rubber masks that you couldn't breathe out of that really didn't form to your face and you're just looking like an idiot. I love hearing about the 50s and the 60s, the innocent times where people didn't worry about anything but having friends and family. Let's bring that back, everybody. Contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Again, ghostseeker4@charter.net. Let me know what you're doing to bring the family and the neighborhood Halloween back. Again, contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. So that'll be the show this week. I didn't get to the witches, unfortunately. That'll be next week's show. I promise you, I'm not going to promise you anything. Even if I say at the beginning of the show, I'm going to talk about this, don't put it in stone. I can't guarantee anything anymore. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening this week. I hope it brings back memories. And again, continue to let me know of your Halloween memories. I love hearing about them. As Christmas gets closer, I want to know your Christmas memories. I want to know what Christmas in the 50s and 60s was like. Thank you for listening this week. My name is Tom Velasquez, the host of the Paranormal Patriot. I'll be back next week. I hope you enjoyed this show. I had such a good time doing it. You have been listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I will talk to you next week. It's Halloween! It's Halloween! It's Halloween! It's Halloween! Come on, everybody! It's Halloween! I'm a pillowcase in with your clown mask. Catch it in my hand in a bourbon-filled flask. So what if I'm coming up on 50 and you can do anything when you're drinking whiskey?